And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway, got the hiccups, to the old west. The most haunted city in the country. Well, today is September 1st. 244th day of the year. Leap year is 245 days. 121 days remain until the end of the year. This year's whipping by. In the year 1173, an interesting story came about. It has to do with the widow Stamira sacrificing herself in order to raise the siege of Ancona by the forces of Emperor Frederick Barbarossa. Now, according to the story, she was a heroic, self-sacrificing woman who saved the city during the siege. Her memory was later taken up by Italian nationalists. Now, Barbarossa had a long-standing grudge against Ancona, one of the Italian maritime republics, because it asserted independence from his rule. And it already successfully resisted an earlier attempt of imperial occupation in 1167. And they made a submission to the Byzantine Emperor Manuel I, Komnenos, and the Byzantines maintained representatives in the city. Well, in the latter part of May of 1173, the imperial forces, commanded by Christian von Buch, Archbishop of Mainz, laid siege to Ancona. And in preparation for this step, the imperial troops had previously requested and obtained a naval alliance with the Republic of Venice. Now, the siege lasted over 4 months. And during a particularly dire moment, the Ancona inhabitants staged a short sortie, managed to throw a barrel containing resin and pitch in front of the besiegers. But it was very dangerous to light it. Well, the widow Stamira came out of the walls, wielding an axe with which she broke the barrel and set it on fire, which destroyed part of the besiegers' war machines. And, of course, she was killed in the process. And for that, she was remembered as a heroine. And then, in mid-October, Ancona's allies showed up, which caused the Imperial and Venetian troops to back off on the siege. But that's how she became to be a hero. 1355... King Trifko I of Bosnia wrote in Castro Nostro Visoka, Vocatum, from the old town of Visoki, 1420, a 9.4 earthquake shakes Chile's Atacama region, causing tsunamis in Chile as well as Hawaii and Japan. 1449, Tumu crisis, the Mongols captured the Emperor of China, which was not a good thing for the Emperor of China. 1529, the Spanish fort of Sancti Spiritu, the first one built in modern Argentina, is destroyed by the natives. 1532, Anne Boleyn is made Marquis of Pembroke by her fiancé, King Henry VIII of England. Eventually, I think, he wound up... She was the second wife, and then she was executed for treason by beheading. He had the habit of marrying, and when they didn't please him, executing his wives, which a lot of people would say was a good thing. Cheaper than a divorce. 1604, Adi Granth, now known as the Guru Granth Sahib, the holy scripture of the Sikhs, was first installed at... Well, as usual, when I start doing a show, everybody and their dog calls me. 1644, the Battle of Tippermuir. James Graham, first Marquis of Montrose, defeats the Earl of Wemyss's Covenanters, reviving the royalist cause. 1715, at the age of 5, Louis XV becomes King of France in succession to his great-grandfather, King Louis XIV. Louis lived literally forever, known as the Sun King. 1763, Catherine II of Russia endorses Ivan Petrovsky's plans for a foundling home in Moscow. 1772, the Mission San Luis Obispo de Toloso is founded in San Luis Obispo, California. 1774, Massachusetts Bay colonists rise up in the bloodless powder alarm. 1804, Juno, one of the largest asteroids in the main belts, discovered by the German astronomer Carl Ludwig Harding. 1831, the Order of St. Gregory the Great is established by Pope Gregory XVI of the Vatican State to recognize high support for the Vatican or for the Pope by a man or a woman and not necessarily a Roman Catholic. 1836, Narcissa Whitman, one of the first English-speaking white women to settle west of the Rocky Mountains, arrives in Walla Walla, Washington. 1838, St. Andrew's Scott School, the oldest school of British origin in South America, is established. 1862, the Battle of Chantilly. Confederate troops defeat a group of retreating Union Army troops in Chantilly, Virginia. 1864, the Confederate Army General John Bell Hood orders the evacuation of Atlanta, which ended the four-month siege by General Sherman. That's when he began his famous March to the Sea. 1870, Franco-Prussian War. The Battle of Sedan is fought, resulting in a decisive Prussian victory. 1873, Kutswayo ascends to the throne as king of the Zulu nation, following the death of his father, Mapande. 1878, Emma Nutt becomes the world's first female telephone operator when she's recruited by Alexander Graham Bell to the Boston Telephone Dispatch Company. 1880, the army of Mohammed Ayub Khan is routed by the British at the Battle of Kandahar. Ends the Second Anglo-Afghan War. 1894, over 400 people die in the Great Hinckley Fire, which was a forest fire that took place in Hinckley, Minnesota. 1897, the Tremont Street Subway in Boston opens, becomes the first underground rapid transit system in North America. 1905, Alberta and Saskatchewan join the Canadian Confederation. 1906, International Federation of Intellectual Property Attorneys is established. 1911, the armored cruiser Georgios Zavarov is commissioned into the Greek Navy. It's now a museum ship. 1914, St. Petersburg, Russia changed its name to Petrograd. 1914, the last known passenger pigeon, a female named Martha, died in captivity in the Cincinnati Zoo. 1920, the Fountain of Time opens as a tribute to the 100 years of peace between the U.S. and Great Britain following the Treaty of Ghent. 1923, the Great Kanto earthquake devastates Tokyo and Yokohama. Over 105,000 people die. 1928, Ahmet Zogu declares Albania to be a monarchy and proclaims himself to be king. 1934, the first Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer animated cartoon, The Discontented Canaries, released to movie theaters. Never won an Oscar, though. Okay, 1939, Nazi Germany and Slovakia invade Poland, beginning the European phase of World War II. 1939, George C. Marshall becomes Chief of Staff of the U.S. Army. 1939, the wound badge for Wehrmacht, SS, Kriegsmarine, and Luftwaffe soldiers is instituted. And on this date, the final version of the Iron Cross is also instituted. 1939, Switzerland mobilizes its forces, and the Swiss Parliament elects André Guisan to head the Swiss Armed Forces. Now, this is an event that can happen only during war or mobilization for war. 1939, Adolf Hitler signs an order to begin the systematic euthanasia of mentally ill and disabled people. 1941, the Nazis execute 2,500 Jews by shooting in Austria, Ukraine. 1951, the U.S., Australia, and New Zealand sign a mutual defense pact called the Anzus Treaty. 1952, The Old Man and the Sea is first published. That's a Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Ernest Hemingway. 1958, Iceland expands its fishing zone, putting it in conflict with the UK, which began the Cod Wars. 1961, the Eritrean War of Independence officially begins with the shooting of Ethiopian police by Hamid Idris Awate. 1961, the first conference in the Nine Aligned Countries is held in Belgrade, Yugoslavia. 1967, the Khmer Chinese Friendship Association is banned in Cambodia. Also in 1967, the 6 Days War. The Khartoum Resolution is issued at the Arab Summit, and 8 countries adopted 3 no's against Israel. 1969, a coup in Libya brings Muammar Gaddafi to power. He was a colonel in the army at the time. Overthrew the king of Libya, and he took power, and he held it until just a few years ago. 1969, Thanh Thien Kim becomes Prime Minister of South Vietnam under President Thieu. 1970, Palestinian guerrillas attack the motorcade of King Hussein of Jordan in a failed assassination attempt. 1972, in Reykjavik, Iceland, American Bobby Fischer beats Russian Boris Spassky to become the world chess champion. 1974, the SR-71 Blackbird sets and holds the record for flying from New York to London in 1 hour and 54 minutes and 56.4 seconds. The speed was 1,435.587 miles an hour. 1979, the American space probe Pioneer 11 becomes the first spacecraft to visit Saturn when it passes the planet at a distance of 13,000 miles. 1980, Major General Chun Doo-hwan becomes president of South Korea following the resignation of Choi Kyu-ha. 1981, a coup d'etat in the Central African Republic overthrows President David Dacko. 1982, the U.S. Air Force Space Command is founded. 1983, Cold War. Korean Airlines Flight 007 shot down by a Soviet Union jet fighter when the commercial aircraft enters Soviet airspace. Kills all 269 on board, including Congressman Lawrence McDonald. 1985, a joint American-French expedition locates the wreckage of the Titanic. 1991, Uzbekistan declares independence from the Soviet Union. 2004, the Beslan school siege begins when armed terrorists take school children or school staff hostage in North Ossetia, Russia. Well, the end of the 3-day siege, more than 385 people are dead, including the hostages, other civilians, security personnel, and the terrorist. 2019, Hurricane Dorian makes landfall in the Bahamas, kills 74 and causes about $3.4 billion worth of damage. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays. Anniversary of the start of the armed struggle in Erythia. Christian Feast Day. Constantius of Aquino. David Pendleton. Ochre Hater. And the Anglican Communion. Giles. Loop of Sins, Navardo, Sixtus of Reims, Tarentian, Verinia, Fabiana, beginning of the new liturgical year in the Eastern Orthodox Church and the Eastern Catholic Church, Constitution Day in Slovakia, Disaster Prevention Day in Japan, earliest day on which Father's Day can fall, September 7th is the latest, celebrated on the first Sunday in September, in Australia, Fiji, New Zealand, and Papua New Guinea. Earliest day on which Labor Day can fall, on September 7th, the latest, celebrated on the first Monday in September, in Canada, the U.S., and Palua. Earliest day on which Teacher's Day can fall, September 7th is the latest, celebrated on the first Friday in September in Singapore. First day of school in a lot of countries in Asia, Europe, and the Americas. Flag Day in Honduras. Independence Day in Uzbekistan. Journalist Day in Taiwan. Knowledge Day in Russia, Ukraine, and Armenia. Random Acts of Kindness Day in New Zealand. Veterans Day in Poland and Waddle Day in Australia. I don't know what a waddle is, but The Australians have always been known for being kind of nutso. Okay. Louis XIV died on this date in 1715. He reigned for 72 years, the longest of any major European monarch. 1939, of course, began World War II when Germany invaded Poland. This was the date in 1941 when the Jews living in Germany required to wear a yellow star of David. This was the day in 1969 Colonel Gaddafi deposes King Idris in the Libyan Revolution. On this date in 1962, United Nations announces Earth's population has hit 3 billion. Rocky Marciano was born on this date. Barry Gibb was born on this date. Gloria Estefan was born on this date. In 1730, Benjamin Franklin established a common law marriage with Deborah Reed. In 1843, Prime Minister of Canada John Macdonald married his cousin Isabella Clark. In 1940, Harry Morgan, the actor, married Eileen Detchian. You remember him? He was famous as the Colonel on MASH. He was also on Dragnet. And in 1986, he married Barbara Bushman. He did get around. Let's see. All righty. Let's see what else we got, if anything. Famous deaths, William Clark, Jacques Cartier, Lillian Wald, Albert Speer, died 1981 on this date. He was the architect of a lot of what Hitler did. Okay. Alrighty. We have got we've been talking about the supernatural. 2015, a mysterious adult voice was heard yelling, "Help me." And that led four police officers to rescue an unconscious 18-month-old girl trapped upside down in her car seat for 14 hours in an overturned car in a Utah river. Now, the toddler's mother was killed on impact when the vehicle went off the road and went into the icy Spanish Fork River. Police officer Tyler Bedoas told the newspaper, "We heard a distinctly female voice from the car saying, 'Help me. Help us.'" Well, the only adult in the car was dead. The little girl was rescued. Well, there are two of the most famous, studied, and debated pieces of cloth in the world. The first one is the Shroud of Turin. 14-foot-long swath of linen bearing the image of what a lot of believers say is the face of Jesus. It's housed in the Cathedral of Turin in northern Italy. It's considered by some to be the burial shroud that was wrapped around Christ. Others say it's a much more recent creation. A radiocarbon dating of a corner of the cloth put it in the Middle Ages, between 1260 and 1390. Catholic Church hasn't said yay nor nay. In France, pilgrims flock to Chartres Cathedral to view the Sancta Camicia, a tunic said to have been worn by the Virgin Mary while giving birth to Christ. It was donated to the church in 876. It disappeared during a fire in the church. Everybody thought it was destroyed, but it reappeared undamaged. Of course, a lot of believers immediately said it was a miracle performed by the Virgin herself. Well, there's been a lot of talk about life after death, near-death experiences, which many say is evidence of the afterlife. People who've died and returned to talk about it describe the most amazing journey of all. You may have heard the expression, died and gone to heaven, and a lot of folks believe this actually happened to them. And those who've had a near-death experience describe a hyper-real journey to a place so wonderful they were tempted to never go back to the living world. And when they returned to the world of the living, they no longer feared death. The rest of us, though, the fact that they did come back provides the closest picture, the most elusive mystery of all. What's it like to be dead? And although many who go through the near-death experiences attribute them to supernatural spiritual forces, depending on their religion, of course, scientists say it may all be about how the brain chemistry reacts to death. British neuroscientist Dean Mobbs, PhD, wrote a book called Trends in Cognitive Sciences. It says many of the phenomena associated with near-death experiences can be biologically explained. One study found comparisons between near-death experiences and how the brain responds to a psychoactive drug called ketamine, which was first used as anesthesia in the Vietnam War. In improper doses, it causes hallucinations and has been abused as a date rape drug. According to Scientific American, researchers say ketamine could now be used to give terminally ill patients a preview of death to help relieve their anxieties. In fact, even the light at the end of the tunnel vision may be explained by the eyes not getting enough blood and oxygen. You know, one of those with a near-death experience was Ernest Hemingway. He said, I floated. Instead of going on, I felt myself slide back. While convalescing from severe injuries suffered in World War I, Hemingway wrote a statement in a letter to a friend. He said, dying's a very simple thing. I've looked at death and really, I know. The author explained years later he had suffered a near-death experience when he was struck by shrapnel during a battle near Fossalta, Italy. Big Austrian trench mortar bomb of the type that used to be called ash cans exploded in the darkness. He said, I died then, felt my soul or something come out of my body like you'd pull a silk handkerchief out of a pocket by a corner. And it's believed his near-death experience may have influenced a passage in his 1929 classic, A Farewell to Arms. An explosion leaves his character, Frederick Henry, seeing a blast furnace flash followed by a roar and rushing wind that left him unable to breathe. He said, I felt myself rush bodily out of myself, out and out and out, and all the time bodily in the wind. Hemingway would stare down death again when he survived two back-to-back plane crashes in Africa in 1954. They left him seriously injured and worsened his alcoholism as he drank more to numb the pain. And then 7 years later, he committed suicide in Ketchum, Idaho. Let's talk about what people claim to see and feel when they die. And despite a wide spectrum of ages, cultural backgrounds, and religions, people who face near-death experiences give remarkably similar accounts. One study found that 80% of those who had near-death experiences have an overwhelming feeling of calm, even bliss, to the point that they never look at death the same way again. And whether a beacon at the end of a tunnel or a flash of brightness, many say that death is not a cold, dark thing, but an experience as flashy as the Las Vegas Strip. And there can be the figures of dead loved ones or anonymous spirits appearing. Either way, the first steps toward death don't seem to be walked alone. And like watching a movie, the dying observe what's happening to them from a distance as if they have left their own body. According to Nita Morhani, I discovered one of life's greatest truths. Heaven is not a destination, it's a state of being. She was down to 85 pounds with lymphoma that had spread from her neck to her abdomen. Went into a coma in a Hong Kong hospital and she believes left this world. She said, I believe that I died, that I crossed over into the afterlife. Now she told, as a public speaker, she described her 2006 journey into a literally unlimited space and time. Said she was reunited with a late father who told her to return to the living, even though she finally felt free of all fear, discomfort, and pain for the first time in years. She said it was the deepest kind of caring, and I'd never experienced it before. She wrote a New York Times bestseller called Dying to Be Me. It was beyond any physical form of affection that we can imagine. It was unconditional. This was mine, regardless of what I'd ever done. I didn't have to do anything or behave a certain way to deserve it. It was for me, no matter what. She said she decided to return because she was certain she'd be healed, which is what happened. The tumor shrank, and she made a complete recovery. Her oncologist credits a team of dedicated medical professionals and treatment that included draining her lungs and chemotherapy. Mahani calls it a miracle. Well, let's talk about the story told by actress Jane Seymour. After she came down with a bad case of bronchitis while shooting a movie in Spain in 1988, she went into anaphylactic shock when a shot of antibiotics went into a vein instead of a muscle. She said, I died and was resuscitated. She talked about it in the Omaha World Herald in 2016. I had the vision of seeing a white light and looking down and seeing myself in this bedroom with a nurse frantically trying to save my life and jabbing injections into me. She said, I'm calmly watching this whole thing. It was thoughts of her children that brought her back to the realm of the living. That's when she said, God, if you really exist and I survive, I'll never take your name in vain again. Although I believed that I died for about 30 seconds, I can remember pleading with the doctor to bring me back. Ironically, and that was a similar situation in her 1980 movie, Somewhere in Time, only it was co-star Christopher Reeve's character, who has an out-of-body experience while dying heartbroken when he's jolted out of his time-bending romance with Seymour. Then we have Ruby Gupta Casimiro, went to the hospital in 2014 to deliver her baby via C-section. The procedure went off without a problem, and the 40-year-old Florida woman and her husband welcomed a healthy baby girl. Suddenly, without warning, Gopara Casimiro started feeling shortness of breath, and her heart stopped. As doctors and nurses scrambled to revive her, she went 45 minutes without a pulse. She told ABC News, I was dead. I remember seeing a spiritual being who I believed was my father. I remember the light behind him and many other spiritual beings. Said a force stopped her from continuing into the afterlife and knew she had to return. After suffering what doctors diagnosed as a rare amniotic fluid embolism, made a full recovery with no lingering complications. She told the Sun Sentinel, I don't know why I was given this opportunity, but I'm certainly grateful for it. Well, let's talk about stories of reincarnation. Let's talk about those spooky accounts of people who remember past lives that make even the skeptics wonder. Let's say you got a particular knack with a 9-iron or hitting a curveball or identifying the many parts of World War II fighter planes. Are you just a little bit smarter than most people? Or do you have the insider knowledge from a past life? Let's talk about the possibility that Lou Gehrig came back from the dead. When Christian Haupt was 2 years old, he told his mother, Kathy Bird, I used to be a tall baseball player. Bird chalked it up to just one of those things kids say, but her son was unusually enthusiastic about baseball. He wanted to wear his baseball uniform every day and spent countless hours pitching and hitting. He was so good that in 2011 he scored a small part in Adam Sandler's That's My Boy. But the more Hawk talked about baseball, the more eerie it became. He spoke of traveling to hotels by train. He described a falling out between baseball legends Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig. Information a toddler would have no way of knowing on his own. And that's when Bird considered the most improbable possibility. And her son was the reincarnation of Gehrig, who died in 1941 at the age of 37 of ALS. When her son said, "I won the MVP award in 1926. Bird, once a skeptic of reincarnation, became a believer, making her case in the 2017 memoir, The Boy Who Knew Too Much. Certainly, it's possible. Let's talk about somebody who was haunted by memories of war. Starting when he was 2 years old, James Leninger of Louisiana would wake up in the middle of the night with nightmares. He'd be screaming, "Airplane crash, plane on fire, little man can't get out." During the day, he had a hauntingly uncanny knowledge of aircraft. Once correctly identifying a plane in a History Channel documentary as a Japanese fighter nicknamed a Tony. In her 2009 book, Soul Survivor, Leninger's parents, Bruce and Andrea, claim their son is the reincarnation of another James, pilot James Houston of the USS Natoma Bay, who was killed in action in the Battle of Iwo Jima. And certainly, there is always the possibility that what we think of as the soul can, in fact, continue to exist after the body dies. Let's talk about an Oklahoma boy named Ryan Hammonds. When he was 4, he'd wake up screaming to be sent back to the house where he'd lived before. And not just any house, but a Hollywood mansion with a pool in the backyard and sports cars in the garage. According to University of Virginia's magazine, his mother, Cindy Hammonds, finally showed him library books about Hollywood. And Ryan pointed to a photo from the 1932 movie Night After Night and said, "That guy's me. The old me." It was a picture of Hollywood agent Marty Martin, who had a cameo in the film. Researchers later claimed that Ryan came up with more than 50 details about Martin's life, suggesting that the agent who died in 1964 was, in fact, reincarnated. Well, how about a boy who claimed to be the golfer Bobby Jones? By the time a boy named Hunter was 7 years old, he'd won 41 of 50 junior golf tournaments he'd played in. 2013 New York Times bestselling Return to Life. Jim B. Tucker, M.D., a child psychiatrist and associate professor at the University of Virginia School of Medicine, attributed this boy's ability with a club to his past life as golf legend Bobby Jones. Tucker says when Hunter was 3, he selected a photograph of Jones' childhood home as his own. Saw a picture of Jones' friend, Harry Varden, and said, "This, Harry Garden," and pointed to a photo of Jones and said, "This is me." Well, Jones died in Atlanta in 1971 at the age of 69. Well, for a few weeks in 1996, a 4-year-old Sonam Wangdu of Seattle became the most famous preschooler in the world. His story was splashed on newspapers and discussed on Oprah. If you get on Oprah, my God, you're almost a god. The rambunctious kid who loved Power Rangers and Spider-Man was recognized in the Tibetan Buddhist community as a reincarnated lama or teacher. Now known as Deshung Rim. Well, this 4-year-old was now known as Deshung Rinpoche IV, the successor to Rinpoche III, who died in 1987 at the age of 81. The boy was separated from his single mother and sent to Nepal until adulthood for his education. Now, while non-Buddhists found the story a little weird, somewhat fascinating, borderline child abuse, the monks at the Hara Monastery had no doubt that he was the same teacher who ordained them and cared for them in the past. Over the years, he's kept in touch with his mother and half-brother, mostly by telephone. Now we got another interesting story. Driven by powerful memories and emotions she believes came from a previous life, Englishwoman Jenny Conkle went to Ireland in the 1990s and tracked down the elderly men and women she claimed were her children, even though they were decades older than she was. She'd come to believe she was the reincarnation of a Dublin woman named Mary Sutton, who died at age 35 in the 1930s while giving birth to her 8th child. She said, "I remember feeling so upset and guilty leaving the children. It was this sense of wanting to see what had happened to them and make sure they were all right." While one of the elderly people she visited accepted her as a reincarnated mother, the others expressed skepticism, although they all acknowledged it was certainly possible. You know, child psychiatrist Jim Tucker is one of the leading, in fact, one of the world's only academics dedicated to the study of reincarnation and children's reports of abnormal memories. After a decade of studying American children, mostly between the ages of 2 and 6, reporting had past lives, he came to a simple conclusion. He thinks it's true. He said, "I understand the leap it takes to conclude there's something beyond what we can see and touch," he said, "but there's evidence that needs to be accounted for when we look at these cases carefully. Some sort of carryover of memories often makes the most sense. These are typical kids for the most part. It's only when they reach the age of about 6 the memory claims subside, coming at a time when a child's brain reaches a new stage of development and reasoning takes shape." He said that for about 70% of the children who claim to remember previous lives, their past selves died from unnatural causes. And certainly that would very possibly account for it. Let's talk about psychics. Seers, astrologers. Do these mystical workers really see the past, present, and the future? Can they move objects? Can they read palms? And when the medium looks in your eyes and tells you something that you and only you know to be true, it's a shocking thought that comes to most of our minds. Has this psychic really cracked through all time, space, and dimension and the deep, dark, unknown world of the spirits? Or is this person just another con artist after your money? Now, these are things you have to consider. Years ago, on my grandmother's farm, she needed to find a new source of water, and they brought in an old man that I had seen forever. He was a dowser. I didn't really know what that was. But a dowser is also known as a water witch or a diviner. Locates underground water, usually using a forked stick from a peach or witch hazel tree. Sometimes a wire coat hanger or a pendulum. With a traditional Y-shaped stick, the dowser holds each of the forked ends and lets the wood guide him to where a well should be dug. Now, a lot of people in rural areas have sworn by dowsers, vouching for their supernatural knack for finding water and ensuring the money for dwelling is well spent. U.S. Geological Survey says the long history of success by dowsers, despite zero scientific evidence that it works, is not surprising. The natural explanation of success for water dowsing is that in many areas, underground water is so prevalent close to the surface that it would be hard to drill a well and not find water. That's according to the USGS. In a region of adequate rainfall and favorable geology, it's not difficult to find water. One water diviner named Rod Sutton said, "I never promise water, but I find it 85 to 90% of the time." How about telekinesis? If you're familiar with Uri Geller, that was his big trick. Can people really move objects using only their minds? For it to work as it does in movies, television, and science fiction books, telekinesis, also known as psychokinesis, would have to violate just about every accepted law of physics, from the conservation of momentum and the inverse square law. It's a relatively simple hypothesis to test and replicate. Put somebody in front of an object until they can move it. After more than a century of scientific research, the conclusion is it simply does not happen. Any studies suggest the contrary, according to researchers, have been plagued by faulty construction and rampant confirmation bias, leaving telekinesis in the realm of pseudoscience, superstition, and magicians. Well, precognition and clairvoyance, that's the ability to see into the future, precognition. And it's intrigued people from ancient times, been linked to religious prophecy and fortune-telling. It's a close cousin of precognition. Clairvoyant seers not only see the future, but can also describe events in other people's past and the here and now. Often this information arrives while they're in trances or dreaming, if it really arrives at all, that is. Skeptics have been around as long as there have been practitioners. Aristotle was among them. Science has an alternative explanation, of course, for precognition, and they call it good guessing. Fortune tellers use savvy analysis of whatever data can be gathered, or they cheat with plants in the audience, or by doing some early research. People believe because they want to, embracing vague observations as relating to themselves specifically. For example, a statement, you have water in your past, or somebody close to you suffered great pain. And they give undue weight to correct predictions and ignore the wrong ones. Well, another interesting mystical power is that of levitation. As a street magician, David Blaine would dazzle passerbyers by seemingly floating off the ground in front of their very eyes. The fascination with floating and flying goes back to the earliest times, often intertwined with the fear of witches who supposedly skated across the skies on broomsticks, thanks to powers given to them by the devil. Many religions also include stories of levitation. Both Buddha and Jesus walked on or floated over water. For professional magicians like Blaine, though, levitation or transvection has long been a staple of their bag of tricks. Whether you're causing a woman to float off the ground, passing a hoop around somebody hovering in midair, or coins and other objects rising from the magician's hand on their own, Blaine's signature levitation trick requires no supernatural powers. Just a pair of scissors and some expendable pants and shoes. According to Michael Grosso, author of The Man Who Could Fly, if any of the stories about levitation are true, they add to the evidence that renders the idea of materialism quite untenable. And then we have mediumship. Those theatrical channelers of the spirit world who summon the dead, speak in their voices or prompt them to move objects to make sounds, began to rise in popularity in the 19th century. This was when Ouija boards and seances were all the rage. But the practice of mediating between the worlds of living and the dead is also found in various forms of religions like voodoo and shamanism and a lot of the New Age religions. Mainstream mediums have been wildly debunked as frauds and tricksters. And the most famous unveiler of the fraud was, of course, none other than Harry Houdini. How about psychic surgery? I've seen that performed. One Toronto police officer, Doug Dunstan, said of a psychic healer's healing investigation, "Our concern is he's a fake. He's taking money away from people who are suffering from serious illnesses." You know, rather than using painkillers and a scalpel, a psychic surgeon relies on mind power to dig his fingers into your body and yank out whatever disease masses are really causing your problems. It's a shocking spectacle. Blood squirting, the tumor slithering out of the skin, followed by total healing without a scar in sight. And although accounts of practices resembling psychic surgery go back centuries, it took hold in the Philippines and Brazil in the mid-1900s. But in the 1970s, when psychic surgery reached its peak of popularity, thousands of Western tourists streamed into the Philippines out of desperation or curiosity. Despite universal condemnation of the practice as pure quackery, any moderately skilled magician can create the illusion by a simple sleight of hand and some chicken gizzards. Psychic surgery is still practiced. 1984, comedian Andy Kaufman went to the Philippine city of Baguio, where a psychic surgeon named June Lebeau claimed to have cured his lung cancer. Kaufman declared the procedure was a great success and then died 2 months later. How about automatic writing? I've seen that demonstrated too. Put a pen to paper, open the mind, and let the spirits move your hand. Deities were said to have dictated the works of Song Dynasty scribes, while angels were credited with authoring the Enochian language in the 1500s England. For writers like William H. Burroughs, who described the naked lunch as automatic writing gone horribly wrong, magician David Byrne, they liked them for practicing free writing, a trick for beating writer's block by letting words flow without regard to grammar or spelling. Scientists attribute, of course, to ideomotor effect, in which the muscles act on unconscious signals. But the mediums who claim to have channeled the spirits of Abraham Lincoln and Betsy Ross allegedly were just fakers. Let's talk about postcognition, also called retrocognition. It's a commonly known as deja vu. It really sense you've been somewhere or done something already. 2/3 of the population have said to have experienced it, with science ascribing it to such causes as a momentary distraction interrupting your initial perception, to a brief short-circuiting of the brain wiring. Some people claiming more advanced post-cognitive abilities say they can go into the past or the intimate details, like a Civil War soldier's battle pain or their great-grandmother's joy at seeing them as a baby for the first time. And maybe there's something to it. Maybe there's not. Let's talk about telepathy. People who can read thoughts or communicate using their minds get labeled telepathic. Although in reality, we all do these things all the time. Gleaning what another person's thinking by paying attention to body language and tone of voice. Some people can telepathically communicate uncannily well. Identical twins, for example. While magicians rely on a combination of acute intuition, practice observation, heavy suggestion, and subliminal messages, as well as old-fashioned sleight of hand and other trickery. But an experiment in 2014 showed that one form of telepathy is possible. It had subjects in India send simple EEG messages via email to French subjects who picked him up through scalp stimulators. See, the brain actually is an electrical generator. And if you're able to decode the signals it sends, you can see what the other person's thinking. Well, let's talk about James Randi, who calls himself the Great Debunker. Who didn't want to be a millionaire? Apparently a lot of psychics, mediums, and mind readers. James Randi is actually a paranormal skeptic, and he offered $1 million to anybody who could provide evidence of paranormal, supernatural, or occult power under some agreed-upon test conditions. Calling himself an investigator rather than a debunker, Randi has nonetheless debunked some of the best, including Uri Geller's claims of being able to bend spoons with his mind, or faith healer Peter Popoff, claim of receiving personal information about people from God himself. Turned out it wasn't God, it was Popoff's wife radioing him the details into his ear. As for his $1 million challenge, Randi never had to part with the cash. Still has it. Now let's talk about one of the most famous psychics, or prophet, if you will, in history. Nostradamus. The 16th century prophet's predictions resonate to the present day. According to Gerson, there's nothing surprising about the reemergence of false Nostradamian prophecies in the wake of a disaster. He's both a man of his time and of our time, which is why this astrologer and seer is still relevant more than 400 years after his death. Trained as a physician, a French-born Michel de Nostradamus, his name would be Latinized to Nostradamus, experienced a spiritual awakening while treating plague victims in Italy and France in the 1540s. Putting himself into a trance while meditating over a bowl of herbs and water, he had visions of the future. Well, in 1550, he started writing popular almanacs that combined folk stories, practical advice, and predictions for the next year. His notoriety helped him become an astrologer for wealthy patrons, among them Catherine de Medici, the wife of Francis King, who had him draw up her children's horoscopes. While in Catherine's employ, Nostradamus prophesied a young lion would pierce the eye of an older one in the field of battle. 3 years later, in 1559, her husband died after he was stabbed in the face with a lance during a jousting match. Well, Nostradamus secured his place in history with the 1555 publication of Lost Prophecies, a collection of major predictions, mostly about plague, wars, floods, droughts, and other disaster. He wrote them in four-line rhymes, which were called quatrains, in a mixture of Greek, Latin, Italian, and French dialect. These prophecies have been hailed for generations for their eerie accuracy up to modern times. Now, scholars, of course, take a more skeptical view, saying Nostradamus' predictions are so vague as to be open to virtually any interpretation. Other correct predictions were due to poor translations, likely done after the fact to make his predictions appear valid. And some, like recent reports that Nostradamus predicted the coronavirus pandemic, were simply fake. Either way, one claim did seem to hold up. On the night of July 1st, 1566, Nostradamus told his secretary, "You'll not find me alive at sunrise." Next morning, he's found dead, laying on the floor beside his bed. He's correct on that one. So, did he predict some major events in history? Yeah, let's talk about the French Revolution. What he wrote, from the enslaved population, songs, chants, and demands, while princes and lords are held captive in prisons. These will in the future, by heedless idiots, be received as divine prayers. After the storming of the Bastille in 1789, the commoners or enslaved populace controlled Paris and issued demands of the royalty or princes and lords, who mostly ended up on the guillotine. You might say they were headless idiots. Let's talk about Adolf Hitler. What Nostradamus wrote: from the depths of the west of Europe, a young child to be born of poor people, he who by his tongue will seduce a great troop, his fame will increase toward the realm of the east. Beasts ferocious with hunger will cross the rivers. The greater part of the battlefield will be against Hitler. Into a cage of iron will be the great one be drawn, when the child of Germany observes nothing. Well, Hitler was, in fact, born in the Western European country of Austria, though he was a member of the middle class. And his speech clearly did seduce his followers and his great troop launched World War II. But Hitler is not a form of Hitler, but the Latin term for the Danube. Then we have the Kennedy assassinations. Nostradamus wrote, "The great man will be struck down in a day by a thunderbolt, an evil deed foretold by the bearer of a petition, according to the prediction among another falls at nighttime." Well, after getting many threats that could be seen as bearers of petitions, the great man, President Kennedy, was gunned down in the afternoon of November 22, 1963. His brother, Robert Kennedy, was killed shortly after midnight, June 5, 1968. And we have 9/11. He wrote, "Earth-shaking fire from the center of the earth will cause tremors around the new city. Two great rocks will war for a long time. Then Artusia will redden a new river. The two great towers of the World Trade Center collapsed and burned in New York City in the terrorist strike of September 11, 2001. Did he predict those? Or is it people reading into it? Let's talk about the world's best known mediums. They've done dazzling TV shows. They've dazzled TV viewers, live audiences, and books and magazine readers with their otherworldly ability to gaze into the great unknown and retrieve stunning predictions of or information only the dead would know. But with great psychic fame comes a storm of criticism. Are they gifted or just blessed with the gift of deception? How about Sylvia Brown, who I had the opportunity to meet in New York? The late medium and author who appeared on the shows like Larry King Live and Montel Williams Show has got renewed attention for seemingly predicting the coronavirus pandemic when she wrote her 2004 book, Prophecy, What the Future Holds for You. She said, by 2020, we'll see more people than ever wearing surgical masks and rubber gloves in public, inspired by an outbreak of a severe pneumonia-like illness that attacks both the lungs and the bronchial tubes, and it's ruthlessly resistant to treatment. Like other self-described psychics, she also made a number of wrong predictions, most seriously in high-profiling missing persons cases, and even failed to foretell her own future, predicting on live TV in 2003 she'd die at the age of 88. In fact, she died at the age of 77, 2013. How about John Edward, who I got to meet in Albuquerque, of all places? The host of the popular show, Crossing Over with John Edward, that aired in the early 2000s, he gave psychic readings to audience members and offered them information from the other side about their dead friends and relatives. He was said to have discovered his psychic powers as a youngster and went on to add best-selling books, speaking gigs, and private readings to a television resume. Controversial figure, Edward has been accused of relying on secretly obtained private knowledge for his supposed revelations or throwing out guesses so general that they were bound to elicit a response from at least some audience members. He told the Syracuse New Times, I don't try to convince people, but simply share what I do. To see the light going in somebody's eyes when they're pretty dark outweighs everything else. On her hit reality TV show, Long Island Medium, Teresa Caputo, larger-than-life psychic, contacts the dead for her clients, describing the experience to almost a cooling chill from head to toe. That's when the soul moves through me, she told the Des Moines Register. Her detractors call her an entertainer and a huckster, uses common manipulative techniques to parent the grieving and the gullible. It's difficult to watch the show and not feel heartbroken when those are so desperate to hear from the departed. That's according to magician and skeptic DJ Groth, to which Caputo responded, I'll never prove or defend my gift. Basically, she says, it is what it is. Well, according to James Van Prague, my work isn't necessarily for everybody, and it's not meant to be. It resonates with those who it's meant to resonate with. In other words, you take it or leave it. Best-selling author and television personality calls himself a mediumship pioneer and respected spiritual teacher who has brought a mindful awareness of the subject of communication with the dead into the public psyche. In his live shows and television appearances, Van Prague claims to communicate with the spirits to deliver detailed messages of love, comfort, and encouragement from loved ones on the other side. Critics say he relies on the same techniques as other alleged sham mediums, and when put to the test, his readings are not always reliable. As evidence of that, he told Barbara Walters she had an elevated white blood count. She didn't. When psychic abilities are presented as authentic, it emboldens a vast underworld of unscrupulous vultures, according to John Oliver. And final analysis, if it gives you hope where none existed before, it's accomplished its purpose. All that having been said, we come to the end of another show. I'll be back tomorrow, and once again, it'll be Ken Hudnall with the Ken Hudnall Show. Until then, have a truly great evening.